It gave credence to a particularly insidious and ultimately dangerous legend in Germany, particularly among the right wing in Germany, that the old imperial state had been stabbed in the back. I think one has to remember that in 1918, when the armistice was signed in November, no Allied soldier was anywhere close to the frontier of Germany. German troops were still inside France. German troops still occupied all of Belgium. The Russians had been defeated. The Italians were reeling and in retreat. It seemed somehow incredibly as if defeat had been snatched from the jaws of victory. And the argument emerged shortly after the Treaty of Versailles that the army had been stabbed in the back by opponents of the regime at home, a combination of liberals, socialists, and Jews. One of the reasons that this stab in the back legend was able to gain credence, to take on an air of verisimilitude, was that was a very important mistake made by the Allies. And that is that the Allies did not negotiate or did not deal directly with the Imperial Army of Germany, which had lost the war, nor did it deal with the Kaiser, who abdicated, or to representatives of the old Imperial German state. Instead, those Germans who signed the armistice and who then would be forced to sign the Treaty of Versailles were representatives of the new democratic German state, the Weimar Republic, as it would come to be known. As a consequence, from the very outset, instead of holding responsible those German leaders, military and civilians, who had lost the war, it was the Republican, democratic, progressive forces in Germany who were forced to bear the burden of this unpalatable treaty. The Germans then claimed with great emotion that the treaty was too harsh, unfair, a diktat. But one could also argue that it was surprisingly lenient. Germany, after all, was never really occupied by the victors. There was no march to Berlin. There was no Allied occupation of Germany, except in this area around the Rhineland. German industrial might had suffered, and would certainly suffer during the 1920s, but it would be because of dislocations from wartime priorities. German industrial might was virtually untouched. This was an important factor when one considers that as the German troops moved after the armistice was signed and German troops began withdrawing from occupied France and out of Belgium, German troops flooded French coal mines in northeastern France, cut down all the telegraph and telephone poles that they could, leaving one last path of destruction on their way out of occupied Belgium and France. Key question was how the treaty was to be enforced without an occupation. What was going to make the Germans conform to the treaty? Why should they recognize it or accept it? Well, in 1918, 1919, into 1920, the German army was gone. The Allies were in an extremely strong position, but without an occupation of the country, what guarantees would the French actually have? The system of security that was foreseen by the framers of the treaty was gravely weakened almost immediately. Wilson, as we've seen, had come to Versailles with the hope of establishing a League of Nations, hoped to gain the agreement of Clemenceau and Lloyd George, Orlando and the others, for a League of Nations which would settle international disputes. And indeed, the League of Nations was accepted at the negotiations at Versailles. But a bitter pill indeed for Wilson to swallow would follow when the United States Senate failed to ratify the Treaty of Versailles and also failed to refuse to join the League of Nations. The American president's own initiative